Okay, so Ahmad's going to now talk about the interventional radiologic approach in the team. We're going through these four presentations really fast, as you can see. Then we're going to break for your questions for all of the speakers, and then we're going to do a couple of interactive case discussions just for your questions that we haven't called. We will be asking questions.
Thank you, Steve, and Dr. Greer for inviting me for this meeting. This is probably one of the rare times when I stand in front of too many surgeons at the same time. Well, going back to my disclosure here, I have these two small disclosures that I thought I should list them. And we very often in interventional meetings, they complain about competing with surgeons, but they to admit here that I actually was taught by three great surgeons. One of them is just sitting next to me here, and Dr. Malkin and the big professor, Dr. Judah Falkman, with his great angiogenesis work. So we sometimes complain about competition for such work, but I'm happy and actually probably fortunate to work in a place where we don't actually compete directly over case. We compete in principle over maybe the items, the description, the diagnosis, but not over the treatment itself. In moving from the interventional imaging or radiological approaches, starting with the same pathways. I'm not familiar with most of these pathways, but here we go. We have all these arrows here that you don't have to remember, but they're actually distinct features for diseases that we deal with. You can, in addition to the clinical scenarios, you can actually look at some of the imaging features, and you can tell that this patient is probably in here, but not in here, and the difference could be very simple to differentiate with some overlap that we are still struggling with. So you don't have to remember this list here, but these are some of the syndromes that with time you can identify with certain success. Now, for interventional teams, when they become part of the vascular anomaly centers, they're actually typically assigned to these malformations. So they assign themselves to do some of these procedures, but this actually is not true at Boston Children's Hospital because we're not assigned to treat specific malformations. We are part of the team at clinical levels, imaging levels, and treatment levels. So it's kind of a very great opportunity to work with a very knowledgeable team who would get us beyond these standard circles that I put in there to go and treat patients. The treatment itself is, you probably have seen some of the good slides, and I'm sure most of you are familiar with the principles here. We still do a good number of sclerotherapy for slow flow malformations. Embolization typically refers to high flow AVMs, in addition to some laser therapy for some superficial veins, and some mini phlebectomy. Mini ligation, we call it mini, we don't want to annoy anyone saying that we do big time phlebectomy or removal of veins. But occasionally you can actually do some of the ligation for bigger veins that are superficial without making a big cut down with some image guidance. The list of the sclerosing agents we use, you're probably familiar with most of them. This is still one of the most widely used agents, SDS 3% or ceftodecol, and bleomycin is gaining widespread use in lymphatic malformation, especially the microcystic and the cutaneous ones. And doxycycline is, again, commonly used for. A lot of people are moving away from using alcohol. I think this is the dehydrated alcohol. I still think if you use it properly, as with anything else in life, it's a great agent. The other way. And so the bulk of the interventional work is done not actually in tumors. This is an example of a rapidly involuting congenital hemangioma, so-called reach of the liver. They can be very hypervascular. You see how many blood vessels you get to it. This is one of the rare findings where you can actually see the supply to the tumor from numerous arteries. And the goal here is not like killing a cancer and depriving it from blood flow. You just need to slow down the flow so the patient can get out of the cardiac failure status and resume life. The bulk of the work, again, is not in tumors. It's on malformations. And you've seen some of the examples of various types, from the superficial ones to the massive, big, deforming ones to the tiny, barely visible ones, to tough locations like the tongue. And one of the key things, and before we start treating these venous malformations, I think this is a crucial slide here and differentiating what it means to have a huge vein like this. This is, I like to call it phlebectasia, just to differentiate it from the spongiform types. Phlebectasias, they're prone to developing big clots that can move up to the lungs, and this is a big risk here. So whether it's in the leg or in the abdomen or the torso, phlebectasia, dilated veins, have a completely different risk than the spongiform type that's contained within an area and typically doesn't cause PE or pulmonary embolism. A rare form is the aneurysmal part or the reticular smaller part. Those are rare. I don't think you need to worry much about them. For venous malformations, tough locations like this one here in the chest, protruding into the chest through a subpleural space, and this is how they look. They enhance a little bit post-contrast, they have a little bit of clots, and we're doing sclerotherapy here. Sclerotherapy will show you sometimes miraculous responses. This is a patient with posterior tongue venous malformation. The access was done simple, small needles through the submandibular approach, and you inject it with the sclerosing agent of your liking. I typically combine citradecol with alcohol. And this is 2 years follow-up after two sclerotherapy sessions. This is a tough location as far as I know. And you can see that the malformation actually is gone. But don't be deceived with this image. This is just one case. The truth is that most of them go through more sessions, and some small leftover is likely to be the more common presentation later. Some of the ways, some technical things that we change over time, huge ones that if you continue with the sclerotherapy, it will take a lot of agent, then you're limited with the dose, and then you end up actually treating the patient endless number of times. This is using glue here. You start with a small amount of glue, and then you disperse it with dextrose just to touch these spaces. And these spaces, once they are filled with the glue, whether it's full concentration or diluted, it does actually create almost a permanent change. So for the deeper areas where we don't aim at shrinking the malformation completely, you can go with the glue. This is one combined approach here for massive ones in the face, and you can see that Dr. Mollican placed these huge sutures here across the malformation because it was difficult actually to keep injecting it when the biggest dose you can leave there will be diluted. The course of the response here from larger venous malformation immediately after the sclerotherapy too, give them some time to decompress, and when we see them after a couple of months, they typically look like this. Differentiating all the malformations listed under venous malformation from this category, someone who walk into the clinic, walk into the toes, and they have contracture of the back of the contracture of the calf, and this is the so-called fibroadipose vascular anomaly, so-called FAVA. Those they shouldn't be actually injected as the primary treatment. They look almost the same sometimes, and the signal could be deceptive. But this is a FAVA, and you don't see it. It's not completely composed of blood. People inject those. Those are solid. The pain is not related to the venous component, and most of the time, this is a classic venous malformation. They may sit in the same area, but don't inject this unless there's a reason to do so. But this is the fibroadipose vascular anomaly that responded with surgical resection, actually. And this is how it looks here. Very fiber fatty tissue replacing the gastroc part here versus the psoas that looks like a normal muscle. And in approaching a patient with Klippel-Trenaunay syndrome, there's actually a set of guidelines that we use. But as we call it the clearance before the patient is taken to the OR for debulking or for any procedure, or any procedure that would lead the patient to stay in bed. So this is, by the way, the venography that you do earlier in life, earlier in the treatment, and you see that these are not actually deeper veins. This is part of the marginal vein, goes up as a sciatic into the internal iliac. The internal iliac continues up here as the IVC. It may look a bit difficult to decipher, but if you do these patients or look over a few of them, you'll figure it out. And before doing, again, anything in these kids, we're moving to treating kids early in life and closing it from the internal iliac all the way down. The biggest risk is to leave these malformations in. Cloves does the same thing. Patients who have very high risk of thromboembolism and giant veins over here, we have to one mortality from such huge veins intraoperative and one one prevented mortality for those. So what we do for those, we actually close them early in life. Lymphatic malformations, I wouldn't dwell on them, but for the macrocystic type, these are simple needle aspiration and injecting agents, and it can be, as shown earlier, it can be just a miraculous response by using just a few vials of doxycycline and a drain, and after that, it was almost 99% gone and still gone. Or in a difficult location where the surgical approach is limited, a small venous malformation. The challenge is still here, which is the challenge that hopefully will be addressed with medical therapy and early in life before we get to this complication. Now, treat early. We do advocate treating these patients earlier. This is a simpler cystic structure here. The MR and the ultrasound at day zero. You wait a little bit, it's getting more distended, a little bit, until they come back at 5 months. And what happened is that it turned into this complex, like empyema style, which is actually very difficult to treat. This is much more difficult than this one here. And, well, I like this line here. One of the minor difficulties was to find a suitable title for chylous diseases. So sometimes we call it chylous, central conducting lymphatic, and there are several other names, but we don't actually agree on many of these terminology. But chylous is different than lymph. This is lymph with various ages of bleeding in it, which is very common, a little bit of blood, versus the chyle that you're familiar with. The only thing I would say here is that the standard technique that was done in the past, where you do a cut down and you find a channel and you spend the whole day trying to cannulate it, was replaced by a intranodal injection, which is find a lymph node and put a hypodermic needle in it under the skin, in the groin, and that actually got us into one of the simplest modifications of this technique, which is now, I believe, is the most commonly practiced in the world. Now, you can see tons of these findings here by injecting a few milliliters of lipidol. This is a complex one here, but it shows you where do these malformations go. They're more extensive than one can just kind of describe here. Every channel here you look at here is an anomalous refluxing channel. But one of the helpful techniques that was added to this is embolization of chylous leak. A patient who was leaking for about 3.5 weeks post thoracic surgery, and the tiny small amount, this is a small child, tiny small amount of contrast is seen here, and then you leak over to here. The access is with a needle through a transabdominal approach. You have a short period of time to have the needle there. The wire is up, a microcatheter here, inject, you see the leak. You put a coil or a couple of coils here and out, and it stops simply. It stops in most of the time. Most of the time stops after the first intervention. Finally, arterial malformations, such as the one we see over here, you can see it well. This is why the MRI was gotten, and you see big draining veins and feeding arteries. The approach has changed significantly from the prior transarterial work where you spend all your day just trying to close feeders and to targeting the big draining vein. This is just putting coils inside the bone that has been replaced by the AVM and the pericortical little sac here. And it was, after one session, it's gone. It's very difficult actually to do this transarterial. From our perspective, we do actually collaborate not just with people within our institution, but we have extensions with teams all over the world. I believe at one point medical therapy will be replacing me and Steve largely, and other people who work with tools and interventional or surgical approaches. One big thing I think eventually will materialize is using all these descriptive things that we have as just verbal narrative or descriptive items in a book, change them into these omics here, where you get the radiomics, where they can the machine learning can learn actually how to identify these. And if you connect them to the genes, which we are seeing now here, you can actually look at the gene, and in your mind, there are features that happen because of this gene, imaging-wise. A machine probably will do it better than me to give us more advanced personalized medicine. If you if you combine it with the proteomics and metabolomics, which I'm not familiar with, I think we can get into a point where, again, most of this work that depends on interventional tools or surgical tools will be simplified and made safer. The last one was a saying from John Mulliken that he didn't see the day where the pharmacogenetics or medications will go and replace some of the work that surgeons do or interventional people do. So he was saying that he probably should look for another job. Well, it's not yet. I think John Mulliken will not need another job for the rest of his life. But I think younger people like Steve probably should consider other things, and I hope at one point we'll actually replace all these invasive techniques by something simpler. Thank you very much.